This is RSVB Update, episode 581, recorded Friday, August 19th, 2016. But why? Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update, your probably favorite RS podcast of the week if you're still listening to us after all these years, enjoying the adventure that is, at some points, descending into insanity or senility, depending on what kind of day I'm having. But, of course, that's why we got a well-rounded co-host to fill out the panel here and make it seem a little bit less crazy, and then I start speaking things that don't make sense. Sirion is here as per usual.
Oh, I thought I was on the show to actually say the crazy things. We might have to talk about this later.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's different levels of crazy, right? I'm told that I am pretty crazy most of the time by people around the RSBNB community and gaming community that we have based on what I say and what I do. So there's that. If you guys take part in any of our extracurricular things. It's always been a tradition that co-hosts, act as an anchor and, provide the sober second thought to what I say, because sometimes it's not necessarily agreed with. And I think on episodes where we agree, that means that I have a valid point. So, not that much this week.
I'm just there to give Shane a good feeling about being right. All right.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I'm just giving the TLDR here.
Yeah. Just wait. You weren't here when we were doing the Tuska podcast last summer. Those were interesting. We were always talking about the game being rigged.
Yes, I remember that. There's probably a lot to say about that update, but I think we're going to talk about something else.
Yes, we are. Something else that's a bit of a head scratcher. Today I noticed outside, and actually a few days ago, that some of the canopies of the leaves here are already starting to change from a deep green to a yellowy green, and it's only the middle of August. So that is, signaling to me that here at least summer is on its way out, and by this point next month all the leaves will be yellow. And this week on RS we were granted the beach update, which is uncharacteristically late, I want to say. I think it should have came in the middle of June and run till the end of July. I think that would have just made a lot more sense, given the way summer goes in the Northern Hemisphere. So, I mean, the joke was also made last week that, oh, maybe we're, trying to target the Australian summer as well. But nonetheless, the beach is here and here until September 12th. So that puts us right into the season when it starts to frost here. So that's always comforting, seeing a beach when it's going to be frosty outside. So,
yeah, I mean, we had surprisingly sunny days at the start of the week, but today definitely was not summery. Maybe cloudy, I was roaming around or something, and that caused the rain, but otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned you were having a mini heat wave at the start of the week, so I guess that makes sense. And as we saw in last week's behind the scenes video, they actually went into the beach there, about, I think, an hour and a half away from Cambridge to the north. So they did want to go for immersion on that. But the beach is here, and it's largely like last year with a few small additions. Did you notice that image that appeared on the beach news posting with this overly joyous woman with her very, very pink hair?
I did not notice that, actually. Oh, yeah. All right.
See, and I mean, I think Jagex is doing great with their concept art and the art that they do. Everything looks so realistic compared to, the art that's done and what actually appears in the game. And then you get something like this that, I mean, it just pops off the page. And, I mean, it's kind of terrifying. That huge smile, I think. It doesn't look real.
Well, at least, like, she's happy and there's bright colors and it looks summery.
Yeah, and then there's a big Claudia in the background that's all menacing and whatnot, so...
Yeah, I never understood what the deal with Claudia is in any way, so I'm just going to ignore her and just pretend she's not there.
And, I mean, that's just the first thing that popped out, and obviously, I mean, that's not the... That's not the extent of this update, but I just found it amusing to see this photo here. And I showed it to some people, and they're like, whoa. So, that's just some feedback on the concept art. But anyways, the beach, largely the same as last year, with two new activities, including Terror Bird races, which grant you agility, XP, and duck hooking in the Hook a Duck minigame. Terror Bird races go around the Lumbridge and South Verrock area, and if you complete the laps as quick as you can, you'll get maximum agility XP and a chance to be on the high scores page, and you can view that high scores page at the start gate. The start gate is just to the south of the Brassica Prime Cabbage Face Punch minigame bonanza start spot, and then you're given a route that goes around various landmarks in the Lumbridge and South Verrock area, and then when you pass through these landmarks, your checkpoint ticks off, and oh, there you go. So, yeah, first one to complete it in record time, you move up on the starting page. So, you just pick up a Terror Bird mount at the gate, a rental Terror Bird mount, or you can use your April Fool's Terror Bird mount that you got earlier this year as well. So, races happen every hour. I think this is an interesting mechanic for agility. What do you think?
Yep.
And the reason I say that is because, you know, there's been so many times in event history, in RS history, where people like myself have wanted to do races through various checkpoints, pick up a certain item at a checkpoint, or pass through, you know, just a standard checkpoint, and that wasn't really possible. So that means that the technology and the engine is here to do that now, and it's something I think that might make an interesting thing that players could buy on the Solomon's General Store, like race markers or something like that, so you can basically kind of, you know, set up your own RuneScape Amazing Race. That was one of my favorite events that I always ran at RxBnB. So,
really? I always thought that we already had an event before that did something like having to race to, like, checkpoints, but maybe
I think you might be thinking of the treasure chest things where you can bury an item at a certain spot, then you just go find it.
No, not like in the store, but just like an event, Jax, like a game event where that was very similar to Terror Bird Racing, but I can't remember the specifics, so it's very well possible that I might be confusing it with a different game.
All right.
But it doesn't strike me as particularly original or new. So.
Yeah, but it would definitely revitalize the events community, I think, and that would be great. Then there's also Hook a Duck, which grants you hunter experience. It's basically a carnival duck hooking minigame like you'd see in the real world, and this gives hunter XP, which you normally couldn't get at the beach, so that's excellent. That's where I've been spending most of my time at the beach, though you might want to hop around because there's different spotlights that grant extra XP. So... yeah, that's pretty much all we have that's new with the beach this year. Standard institutions are back, including Claudia, every 45 minutes after the hour. Damage scales with your life points, and everyone is able to fight, because that way then, if you're, you know, level 3 combat, you won't get blown away instantly. So that's great. And then, of course, there's sand castles for construction XP. You gotta love that for your construction XP, right?
I already was 99 construction. So.
Okay. Rock pool fishing for fishing XP, barbecues for cooking XP, coconut gathering and depositing for farming XP. Not sure how I feel about that, but I'll allow it. And coconut shy for ranged XP, as in you throw targets at the various coconuts and you get ranged XP. Beach Ball rolling once again for some more agility XP, and Muscle Beach for the strength XP, which I know you're a fan of.
I'm definitely a fan of like training my muscles and showing them around on the beach. That's like the good thing about summer.
I don't know if our listeners have seen Sirion in game, but you tell them about your outfit.
It's I would say fairly minimal and consists of like swimming shorts.
Yeah, and you enjoy running around in that, I guess, and you basically show off the body that RuneScape offers you.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I don't get to do it in real life. I'll be very honest with that. So, well, I don't know. I mean, it started as a joke because a friend of mine really didn't want me to get the swimming outfit, so I got it. And I got positive comments on my, how should I say it, on my looks, on my six-pack, so I decided to just show it all year round.
Well, I guess that makes sense, and that's good as leader of High Council Clan Quest. So,
yeah, I mean, I apologize to like people who want to put me on images have already notified me that it's sometimes a bit difficult and have to like tone my muscles down using Photoshop to actually make me fit. But what can I do?
Oh, and you know, RS has always been slowly but surely creeping up to Fashionscape, and it was only a matter of time before they offered an outfit like this. And, you know, I mean, not everyone wants to be like you, Sirion. Not everyone wants to be, what's the word I'm looking for with their body physique? I don't know. But,
buff?
Yeah, there you go. So maybe, like I've always said, that it should be an option to make your RS character fat.
I mean, there's definitely a lot they could do with, like, character customization. I think that was actually one of the 2017 survey options, wasn't it?
Yeah, new character models, which...
So that is definitely something they could do. I mean, it doesn't bother me particularly, but...
Yeah.
I mean, it would be nice, yeah. I mean, there's always the ogre outfit you could put on.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, ogres are ugly. So... there's also a different thing this year, last year for Iron Man users. They can get XP and they earn 50% of the XP as a normal account.
I think they reverted that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it says here in the news posting that Iron Man players earn 50% less XP for participating in beach activities. So you're saying they get full XP?
Yeah, I think they reverted it because basically this didn't fit in like the weird Iron Man guideline. So it's like, actually, it's fine. So, I don't know. I saw a comment go by on like the RS forums, I think. I didn't look into it because I don't have an Iron Man, but I think they referred to that decision.
Interesting. All right. Yeah, that's pretty much it for the beach. There is one new feature. It's the treasure map that came with the beach, available from August 16th through September 11th. It's a daily login thing, where you go claim a treasure map, and each day you get to claim a prize for free. And then if you miss a prize, well, you need to redeem a bond, and you'll be able to collect all the extra prizes. So
complain too, probably, about,
well,
that
yeah,
they're not really worth a bond. But
yeah, I mean, some of the prizes so far have included shakers, bonus stars, bonus XP lamps. You know, basically little things that you would get from Treasure Hunter that you're just getting for free each day. I don't know if it's going to be worth a bond. We'll have to wait and see about this. I only missed the first day on this. I don't know.
So what do you think is up with this? We saw at the start of the month that Jagex gave an extra key to everybody, all the members at least. Now they have this thing where you have to log in every day to get all the rewards. If I remember correctly, there was a third thing which I completely forgot about, but it definitely seems like Jagex is trying to get people to log in every day. So I'm not entirely sure what's up with that. I've tried to put myself in their mind, and I understand that it's healthy to have a game where people try to play like regularly at least. I am not entirely sure what Jagex gains from having people log in every day.
I think they're just trying to gain awareness for Treasure Hunter and, you know, introducing people to the things that you can get with the extra key and now the treasure map. And they'll say, oh, I was getting all these things during August, you know, once a day. And then, you know, I'm also getting that extra key a day. So with that, oh, this is all going to disappear come mid-September. So maybe I might subscribe to Premier Club next year, or I might decide to buy some Treasure Hunter keys next time there's a promotion I like. I think that that's what it's got to come down to.
I mean, that is the only reasonably logical solution I could come up with, but the strategy that Jagex is currently using seems really, really aggressive on this front of, like, log in every day because otherwise you're going to miss on this and this and this. And that is behavior that we haven't really seen before, except for the original introduction of daily keys.
Yeah, and I think that if you look at the flow of cash that can arrive from this, you'll see that when you are putting out Treasure Hunter promotions, you have a team of, you know, 4 to 5 people working on the Treasure Hunter updates and all that. Maybe it's less, I don't know, I just assume that's what the team size would be. When you have that team involved in that, this team is static, and most of the resources that have come from the Treasure Hunter map so far, you know, the lava lamps, the loot pinata, and the cocktail shakers are items that are already in game. So when you look at it from a return on investment standpoint, by putting these things in the treasure map and encouraging people to log in every day, it's basically free advertising for what is probably, I'm going to guess, a cash cow for the game. Because, I mean, you just put some new promotions in it, make a news posting, post some posts, and lo and behold, there you go. Like this week's Treasure Hunter promotion is all beach related, relating to shakers and whatnot and things that benefit you at the beach. So it's basically free money.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not convinced about the reasoning. It seems so aggressive. Maybe it's a coincidence that these things like happen in the same month. I just can't get rid of the thought that there must be something behind it, and it sort of scares me that that might be a bad thing for us players, especially those not interested in microtransactions.
Well, yeah, of course. And, I mean, like, if you just miss one day, you cannot get that prize back. And you're going to basically be getting a month's worth of free stuff from this. And if you, you know, are going away on vacation from, say, the 18th to the 30th for 12 days, you're going to miss a lot from that. So for 12 days, you know, dump one bond in, which I'm not sure what the current price is on that. Let me check.
Or like 11 mil, I think.
Or just spend, you know, the $5 on the bond. There you go. You get everything unlocked. And with that, it's basically 12 mil for lots of free stuff. I mean, let's just try and put a value on what we've had so far. 5 cocktail shakers was today, the 19th. Yesterday was a summer loot pinata. The day before that was medium lava lanterns, 2 of them. And before that was 4 advanced pulse cores.
So it sounds like that is somewhere around the uncommon treasure hunter prices. So
yes.
Every day you open like a treasure map, you're gonna get probably more on average than a treasure hunter key. So you can, even if you look at how many treasure keys one bond gives, I'm not sure. Is it like 5?
I'm not sure.
So you can sort of put it in context there.
I've done that.
But I don't know. I find it. I mean,
one
the way
bond
you say
gives
it,
you 15 treasure hunter keys.
All right, so that's pretty significant. So, I mean, if you're gonna get like, if you're gonna miss those 12 days, the bond might probably be like balanced out with you would spend it on keys. But I've never found keys really good value for bonds in the first place. So, I would be interested to see if people are actually spending the bond.
Yeah, well, we can, of course, see what's going to happen with the bond price, because it's basically 30 days, and that's enough time to look at, you know, an increase and see if that happens in the last 2 weeks or so. So we'll definitely pay attention to that. But also, I think if you use the bond right now at the start, you can access all of it, or no?
No. You can only get access past ones, not future ones. But if you use it now, then miss a few days, and then in the future look again, then you can always get those prizes you missed. So it's like one bond, single prize, and you're always on like the ability to get past prizes. I'm not entirely sure why Jagex make it sound so complicated. It's just pay a bond, get the ability to claim past prizes.
All right. Yeah, I don't know. I think it just comes down to treasure hunter awareness and, you know, showing people that it's not, it can be horribly overpowered. I was going to say showing people it's not horribly overpowered, but it can be if you have no limits on the amount of funds you can put in. But normally
I got a little bit. The lava lambs that convert bonus XP to experience, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't like those.
Yeah. I mean,
but let's not go into that.
Yeah. Well, actually, the Lava Lantern gives regular XP and bonus XP. It doesn't use the bonus XP.
Right. Then I was confused with like what my screen
said.
Yeah,
I forget what the other ones were.
Yeah. Alrighty.
Yeah. So that's pretty much it for the beach. Rewards this year, you know, same thing like last year. You do things at the beach. You have a random chance to get a title. And also, you can get tradable tokens that can be redeemed for one of the new beach items. So you can, of course, trade these with people right now. And they say that they will become untradeable at the end of the year. So items you can get are the shark fin, the lifeguard chair hat, Claudia wings, duck ring, sand dunk resting animation, ice lolly wand, hacky sack resting animation, water balloon launcher, conga eel whip, coral sword, coral dagger, starfish pet, and puffer fish pet. These items can be also purchased around the beach for rune coins, as can challenge gems, dwarven challenge barrels, party packs, and masterwork music boxes. So yeah, rune coins. I think there are 15 rune coins each, if I recall. Four.
The unlocked 15?
Or maybe 150. I don't know.
150, yeah.
150. I know it was a 1.5. Let me look that up.
Possibly 150, yeah.
I do remember reading about this. So, I mean,
the tokens are going to get so common that by the end of the event, you can probably buy each of them.
Yeah, and I mean, this event ends mid-September. You have until the end of the year to claim the tokens. So, I mean, it's not something that you're going to, you know, have to rush for. Okay, yeah, not 150, actually. I'm not sure where I got that from. But there are some that aren't available as well, but for example, the Claudia Wings token, 100 rune coins, Conga Eel Lip, 33, Coral Dagger, 33, Duck Ring, 200, Hacky Sack Resting Animation, 150, Ice Shooter token, Lifeguard Chair token, 25, Puffer Pet, 100, Sand Dunk Emote, 150, Starfish Follower, 100, and Water Balloon Launcher, 66. And all these tokens appear to be going for roughly about 1.5 million on the Grand Exchange right now.
No, so, I don't think that's accurate. The point is,
well, that's the GE price. I mean, it could be higher.
They started out at 1.5 million, and the first thing they all did, almost all did, is drop and crash.
Interesting.
I sold my Conga Eel Whip token for like 25k or so. I don't know. Like, that's... I think this is a good time to do a general complaint on, like, these visual rewards. Some outfits in RuneScape look really, really cool. But all these events, especially, like, beach events, Christmas events, like basically all the holiday events have like these weird overrides that look just absolutely out of place. I mean, I don't mind the visual override part of RuneScape. I think it's fun. I think it gives you the ability to make your character look unique, even when everybody is using the exact same armor, because that's just the best armor, which sadly is also the case in RuneScape. So it gives you that uniqueness. And at the start, the outfits were like really RuneScape themed. I mean, think when the loyalty store came out, right? Do you remember those outfits?
Yeah, yeah.
Those were fine.
Like the Eastern Lands Captain outfits, those still look pretty nice even today.
Yeah, and there's like the Fox outfit or something, I think. And I mean, they looked fine. They looked like something someone might wear. Maybe they're a bit on like the odd side, but they looked like something someone might wear. Now, let's compare it to one of the visual rewards of what we have right now. Claudia wings.
Mm.
Lifeguard chair head. Conga eel whip. I mean,
probably asking why, people, right?
Maybe there are a few people who like walking around and with the silliest things. I've tried it once. I got tired of it after 5 minutes. I like to make my character look like something that could be in the world.
If you go to a beach and you get someone drunk, they could put a chair on their head. I'm just saying.
I mean, I can't really argue with that, I guess. But I mean, in general, we see these weird rewards, like putting Christmas putting head. Or, I mean, I look at that and I'm like, this just doesn't fit. And RuneScape regarding visual overrides is just going the way of all these Asian MMOs that I used to play when I was younger.
We'll talk more about that later.
Oh, can we?
Yeah, we will.
Oh, okay. Exciting. But yeah, I mean, you have games like, give two examples. MapleStory is a famous one that went all the microtransactions way, where you could look like pretty much anything. Think of a job in real life and you could look like it. Even though it's a medieval world, you could look like a stripper cop or something. I thought it looked like that. But
I'm glad that we don't have that in our ass.
But the same thing happened to how do you pronounce it? Fly for Fun, Fliff, or whatever. Also went the way where you could look utterly ridiculous. And RuneScape is going the same way. And I am really, really sad that it has gone this way. Like, the whole thing has blown up. And then I look at a list of rewards and you get things like Claudia wings and the lifeguard chair head and a duck ring and a conga eel. I doubt people will actually use them, and I don't think they look good. And they also look out of place with how most of the other items look. They always have this like graphical override touch.
Maybe that's why they're all crashing.
And the character is the only thing that it looks different from all the weapons. So,
I think that's why everything's crashing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the only thing worth getting here are the resting animations. Those are cool. And I'm fine with resting animations.
Hacky sack resting animation.
Yeah, and the sand dunk one. They're both pretty good. But those are the only thing that I want tokens for, and those are probably the only things.
What about
that
the coral dagger and coral sword?
They just don't look good. I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm not interested in how they look. I have 500 swords overrides by now of things that I'm never going to use because they were quest rewards or like event rewards. I never wanted them. There's such an abundance of them, and I don't see myself using them. So if you look at the event, the experience rates are pretty good.
Yeah.
And then there's like the cocktails that give you like XP boosts. How is that not another reward for the beach event? Why do you need to put in like these I can't come up with the word, ridiculous items.
Yeah.
That make your character just look bad, that nobody's going to use. Like, seriously, if you want to spend, like, if you have graphics budget, then spend it on, like,
I don't think they're spending it on the graphic budget here. The beach or the sand dunk emote, right now, that's just a Claudia claw that appears. It grabs your player and it dunks them into the ground, whether or not there's sand there. So it effectively looks like your player is being, you know, having its head rammed into the ground.
Oh, that looks fun. I mean, I only have the hacky
painful,
sack one.
Painful. Hacky sack one is great.
So, yeah, I mean, you're sending me a GIF here. Oh my, that looks bad. I don't want that.
Yeah, that's your sand emote. So
yeah, I mean, I might. No, I'm not gonna get it. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a bit of a rant, maybe, but
It is a bit of a rant, and I think it's rightly so, because I mean, unless you're, you know, out to look absolutely crazy, or, you know, there's no intention of these items ever being used, but they just wanted rewards. That, I think, is the only reason you would create these, is if you want to, you know, just create a set of rewards. Because, like, when the beach is not happening, you don't see any of these emotes coming out. So I think the argument could be made is that, I'm going to try and defend this here. It's probably not a good defense, but I think that if you're spending this month at the beach in game, and, you know, you're just going to be spending the majority of your time there, because there's a bank and everything, and you can train all your skills practically. Having rest emotes and weapon overrides that, you know, tie in with the beach motif might be something that people are interested in. And I think that that is probably why you're seeing these absurd things being added to the game.
Yeah, but, I mean, fine, completely fine. But come up with reasonable things. Like a parasol as override, fine. Looks weird, but acceptable, right? I can see that happening, but Cole, maybe it's just that I don't like the look of these particular overrides, but it's like this edge somewhere where people will just not use them, and I think it's a waste of graphics budget. I mean, I can't imagine it taking very long to make like a Cole sword, but yeah, I looked at these rewards and it just didn't appeal to me at all. And I cannot see them appealing to a large group of people. Maybe a few, but...
Yeah. All right. Well, let us know what you guys think, listeners out there. Do you enjoy the rewards from the beach, or are they just, you know, something that you won't ever use or come back to once the beach is gone?
Because and feel free to send us pictures of the most ridiculous thing you can, like...
That's true. If you want to send those pictures in, you know, you can email them with a discussion topic, or just email them to questions@rsbme.com. I guess that's safe to do that. Or you can, you know, just send it to us on Twitter. We're at rsbme, and it can go there. So, all right. Well, there's the beach this week. Ready to move on to the patch notes?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I think we did enough beaching around.
Oh, there you go. Nice pun. Now, these patch notes, I think, are very extensive this week and do some great things for the game, including improving accessibility. Starting off with the Eyes of Glove request has had some colors tweaked to make it more accessible for players with color blindness. You know, this is a major issue for the RS community and the questing game, because, you know, quests are supposed to be the avenue of providing most of the lore in game. You know, Eyes of Gallifrey, of course, that's excellent. That's been fixed. I know we had some trouble with the Zamorak heist quest last year, and numerous other quests when they'd come out. Within the Light is one as well. So, always great to see the game being made more accessible for those with color-impaired vision.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to repeat myself all the time, but I think like 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, I made a point that it should be standard procedure at Jagex to play quests with a colorblind filter over the game to see how it plays for those people. I understand it's a big ask to like make the game accessible for everybody, especially for a relatively small company like Jagex. But I mean, these things you need like ironed out.
Yeah, I actually know three people in the immediate RSVNB community and update community who are colorblind and have had issues with this before. So maybe we just got lucky with that number, but it might be more common than people think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has a there's like a significant percentage of males that actually have like red green color blindness. It's like one in it's a two digit number, but a very low two digit number, like 1 in 10, 1 in 20 or something. So it's definitely a very big issue.
Yeah, it's low, but it's there.
And even if Jagex, like in the first week after the release, just works with the community to find these issues and then solves them by the week after, it's not ideal, but at least you can then crowdsource the problems and still fix them. But there should be some dedication to it. And I am happy that they fixed it. But Eyes of Glofi, I don't know when it came out, but
many moons ago.
This is too late.
Yeah.
But still good.
And now some changes to the wilderness. Minor buffs considered, but welcome changes nonetheless. Amended the fail rates for the wilderness agility course. It is no longer possible to fail at level 99 agility. So for those training past 99, I think that might be a welcome choice if you want to do it that way. But I think at 99 with Voice of Saren and, you know, the Light Follower and all that, I assume that the Heffen agility course would still be better.
Yeah, it wins by a big margin. I did the MARF last week. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no reason not to do this then, because, you know, it's another option. Let's just say someone's going for 99 agility and they don't have access to Prif yet. This is a perfect thing.
I mean, maybe with like a demonic skull, you might get close to the Heffen weights, especially without Voice of Saren, because of course that's like...
You can't control that.
You can't control that. So maybe you can like slightly boost your efficiency a bit, but I don't think you really get a lot out of it.
Cursed energies now convert into other energy types at 100 to 150 per action rather than 10 to 15. So you're not going to, you know, be standing there converting these energies for, you know, the next few hours. Definitely a lot faster now, so that's welcome. 10 to 15 is really small. Enriched cursed wisps can now have their spring duration extended by offering a cursed memory or enriched cursed memory. I think this is an interesting mechanic for divination, especially in the wilderness.
I think it's interesting. I doubt it's a discoverable feature, though. Like, will people find out
right. They
can offer, like, a thing? I don't know if there's, like, a right-click option for it, but...
And see, that's the thing. There's so many of these patch notes that come out and we're, you know, so excited about them the week they arrive, but, you know, weeks or months later, if you're, you know, just picking up the game and you don't listen to this great podcast, you will not know about this.
Mm-hmm.
So... I guess there's a reason to be said for everyone checking the patch notes every week. Familiars no longer berate their owner when they fail to pickpocket at a rogue. Okay, I didn't have a familiar out when I was there, but this sounds amusing. I don't know what they'd mean by berate, but okay.
It may be betray, but like some weird autocorrect.
Maybe. Because there were some other typos in this week's
posting. Oh, there's always typos in the patch notes. Like, they should just read over them once, and I think they could fix most of them. But
The Wilderness Sword Tier 4 can now be used to teleport from up to level 30 Wilderness rather than 20. So that's an interesting mechanic.
Isn't, like... So how was it again? Because you can use teleport skills, like teleport spells, up to level... 30 and 20? Items to level 20, or the other way around?
I thought it was all up to level 20.
Because I think like the Amulet of Glory or something could like teleport up to level 30. But this has been a very long time.
It's been a long time, and I swear everything was 20 back in the day, but that might have changed.
All right, well, maybe. Look it up if you're interested.
You will now find more items washed up on uncharted islands based on the island size, and logging out will still wash away the unpicked items. And, of course, this is relating to the Ark.
Oh, does it mean we can finally get 5 driftwood from our first island?
Maybe. But there's also going to be different items on these uncharted islands, such as the potential to find fruit and bones. I mean,
not entirely sure if you will should want to eat fruit that washed up on the shore.
Yeah, and the question is, where did it come from, right?
Yeah, especially if bones are the other option.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe somebody was, like, practicing beach, like, bones to peaches on, like, a ship, and a ship sunk.
Yeah, maybe. And, you know, I guess that's okay, because aside from farming, where do you get fruits like papaya and all those ones, right? Mm. So, I guess that's fine. And with regards to bones, I mean, yeah, any time a body is dumped in the water, it will decompose and the bones will wash up. Potentially body parts will also wash up as well. Here on the West Coast, in the Puget Sound and the Vancouver Island area, in the, you know, mid-2000s from like 08 to 2012, there was like, I think, 13 feet to wash up on beaches in that region, and no one ever found out why they did that.
That's a very interesting story.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, I was just reminded of this because it said bones, right? So, I mean, it's not unheard of to find weird things in the ocean. So, it is entirely within the realm of possibility for JX to put some bones and some fruit on the Uncharted Isles. So, I just wanted to offer this for a bit of context, and that someone is potentially dropping bodies in the Pacific off the West Coast. So,
yeah. All right.
Yeah. All right. Back on track. Sorry about that, everyone, if that was a little too macabre for you. But shark tooth necklaces now give an additional 5% fishing XP while fishing wobble gongs. All right. That seems like that should have been in there. I still don't think wobble gong are going to be a great fishing method. So. Oh, was this the one you had no comment on?
Oh, all the arc ones. I'm not going to comment on it anymore. I think everybody agrees.
Yeah,
about the state of the arc.
We beat that one to death. The arc, unfortunately, became this podcast whipping boy for a week or two.
Yeah, it was definitely not a state of the arc update.
That should have been our title for that week. Steve the Monkey Butler will now ask to take unnoted logs to the sawmill for the usual fee. I guess this was broken before. That's excellent. They've also replaced several hundred, underscoring several hundred, synthesized looping sound effects with more realistic non-synthesized ones.
I haven't had the chance to hear one yet, but I haven't done... I did some combat against Claudia and didn't really hear a difference. So, do you know of any sound in particular that has been changed?
And see, I keep my environment sounds on such a low level that I would likely miss them when they were doing this.
Oh, it's a looping sound effect, so it's probably like the environment sounds.
Yeah.
So, oh. All right. Oh, I might give that a listen. I mean, it's not a bad
chopping
thing.
Chopping wood, perhaps?
Mm. All right. Oh, that's interesting. Like mining. Mining always sounded a bit like, huh.
Yeah, I'll have to go around and see.
I hope it doesn't really take away from the cartoon feel RuneScape has. Like, there's a really delicate balance. I think you have to get there with like realism and like make it a bit cartoony. So yeah, I'm gonna like go around and do some skilling maybe just to see what this is about.
Yeah. Also, I did check it out, and it was upgraded to be level 30 teleporting at some point in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is level 30.
Okay.
The Hero Adventures and Power Parent interfaces can now be kept open during combat. This has been a long ask of everyone since the new interface system came out in 2013. So we're happy about that. Lets you check things like your achievement progress or, you know, maybe pull out a different ability if you don't want to put those on keybinds while you're doing combat. Adventures, you know, once again, checking quests while you're in combat, that's great as well. So, once again, a nice quality of life update. I'm happy about that. The quest list may now be used as a smaller child window. Each quest opens the relevant entry on the parent interface as usual. So basically what this means, if you remember the pre-RS3 interface, there was actually an icon in the ribbon for quests. You can effectively duplicate that now with the current ribbon.
Yeah, I mean, not very helpful for us anymore, given that the list will be mostly empty or green, depending on your filter settings. But I guess it's a nice thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to build an interface that was a lot like the legacy interface, I can see how that's useful. And, you know, I'll take this point to also bring up the idea that it would be great if, you know, we could have another 4 or 5 extra little slots on the ribbon, because right now it only currently holds 8, I believe. I would love to see that go up to 12 or 16, or maybe an unlimited number, and make that a sizable
object. Yeah, I mean, if you want to like fill like the entire bottom or side with icons, I think that it should allow for that.
Yeah,
I think there's definitely use cases for that as well.
That is my favorite thing about the legacy interface right now, is that you can have, you know, that huge ribbon at the bottom, and then at the right of your screen, you can have the panels appear. I really like that aspect of the legacy interface, but I can't duplicate it on the RS3 interface because I don't have enough stuff in the ribbon to be able to do that. So I would really like an expandable ribbon.
Yeah, that sounds, you know, I can agree to,
because,
with that.
Because, I mean, can we all agree that that was one thing about the legacy interface that was nice and simple?
It was. I mean, I sort of replicated by having tabs in, like, a window, which I switched between. I don't use the ribbon for, like, backpack. I just use the tabs. So it's very close, but there's only so much space for tabs there, and you can't go outside of
the
window.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I would like it back. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And sometimes I want to play in the legacy interface, but then, that also means I don't have a resizable mini-map, and that's just painful now.
I saw, like, some previews from the graphical rework, and I saw that JGX mods were playing in legacy interface, and apart from the fact that it doesn't show any trust in your product, it just hurts. It doesn't look like nowadays RuneScape anymore. So I really hope that we can still find some love for the new UI.
Yeah.
There's definitely improvements to be made.
Yeah. And, I mean, they did a great job with it. And, you know, being 3 years since it's come out, I think they could definitely, you know, go back and look at it and see how it's aging, because that's a standard thing you do.
It is still very, very clunky. There's still moments where I'm like, I accidentally dragged my window again. But if I lock my interface, then I accidentally close something. And it's like, I am not very encouraged to, like, go in and experiment a bit with my interface, because it's always such a hassle and so easy to lose what I had. So, I mean, it could definitely use some quality of life upgrades. And
yeah, definitely.
The basis is there, but could be better.
I'd like to see better gravity snapping also for the windows.
Yeah.
And that basically means that if you have a window in the bottom left of your screen, when you resize the window, it'll remember you want that in your bottom left. Whereas right now, let's say you have a window in your left and your right, you bring them closer and closer together, they'll inevitably snap together. Then when you bring the window back out again, it won't appear how it was. So.
Yeah.
Anyways, on to some changes in the general Lumbridge area this week. You guys will have a laugh at these. Duke Horatio has moved the two families displaced by the Battle of Lumbridge into better accommodation across the river, away from the threat of goblins. And there's more. The magical defense wardsmen hired to defend the castle during the Battle of Lumbridge have been dismissed. And now that the threats posed by the Battle of Lumbridge are long gone, the elite Lumbridge guardsmen have been reassigned to protect the main bridge from goblins. And and the Manage Crisis option on Duke Horatio in Lumbridge has been removed.
I mean, you can't see this on the podcast, but I'm facepalming right now. I think that's the only right response to this. I mean, yeah, great that Jagex finally fixed this, but the Battle of Lumbridge was like, what?
Three years ago?
3 years ago?
And the Manage Crisis option was the interface you went to do all the voting, to allocate resources, and to choose, you know, what each side was going to do and how you interacted with the conflict event. So,
oh, right, the Manage Crisis thing where everybody always just voted for the most expensive option and ended up with no money at the end.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you leave things to the community.
Well, I mean, it was an interesting experiment nonetheless, and I think that event...
And then Rune Labs came out.
There you go. And I think that event was the most successful, followed by the Armadil and Bandos event later that year, and then after that, I think everyone got tired of world events.
I think I liked the Armadil and Bandos one better because it was more short-paced than the Battle of Lumbridge. Battle of Lumbridge took, like, months.
That's right. That's right.
And it was so boring going in there and do the resources. I want another Armadil versus Bandos-like event. That was so much fun.
And one that's not rigged.
And one that's not rigged.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyways, that's it for the patch notes. Anything else you'd like to throw in before we move on to something else?
No, I think I got my week's portion of salt.
All right.
Well, we're going to talk about something that...
Yeah, we are. And that's the RuneScape Eastern Lands, Explore the Eastern Lands cinematic trailer. And now, of course, they say cinematic. I'll narrate a bit here. Basically says it's a RuneScape Studio production, and this is effectively showing how the Eastern Lands would look if they had full cinematic abilities to it. And I think the music that they used for this was just great. You don't hear any of this in RS, and it doesn't look like any of this, but let's just have a listen and see how they're promoting this here.
There's more to the world than this. You need to forget what you know and embrace what you don't. 'Cause there's treasure in the Eastern Lands, just not where you'd expect it. It's a place to get rich if you've got quick hands. And every island can be claimed if they don't claim you first. So come to the Eastern Lands, fill your boots, and I promise we won't steal them from you.
And it ends off with the title Discover RuneScape.
Shane, I think you played the wrong trailer. This was for that one mobile game, right?
That's right. That's right.
I mean, I saw it, and I already said it to you. This looks like a mobile game trailer. And now I listened to it, and I was like, this is like the advertisements I hear on Spotify about all these crappy paywall mobile games. But yeah, I mean, go on.
I showed this to someone who has been somewhat absent from the RS community, someone who doesn't listen to this show, but they know me. And I mean, they knew the Eastern Lands were out and they kind of know what they're about. And I showed them this video and they had the exact same reaction as you, Sirion, that, oh, this looks like a trailer for another mobile game. It looks like a Chinese mobile game trailer. So it's very interesting that the two of you feel the same way about that.
I mean, imagine this. Imagine that Idle Adventures was focused entirely on the Eastern Lands, right? Imagine that. This trailer could have done.
Yeah, it certainly could have. I mean, I'm honestly not sure what to think, because someone sees this, they're going to, you know, not see that this is actually in-game.
So, I think the problem with this trailer is it doesn't show anything that RuneScape is. It talks about, like, exploring the Eastern Lands. I'm sorry, but that piece of content is, like, one of the worst in RuneScape. This trailer is putting me off playing RuneScape. So, and I'm a pretty big fan.
There's nothing in here that, or rather, sure, it looks nice, but there's nothing in the Eastern Lands to explore, aside from random voyages that you have to pay for.
Yeah, I mean,
like, this maybe this should have come out in October after Batch 2.
This is the same as all the mobile games ads. There's a reason I say this sounds like a mobile game ad. Because mobile game ads, mobile games don't, I mean, they look interesting for what they can do, but they don't look great. And the content is fairly repetitive. You click something, you manage something, and that's it. And so to make it like spiced up, they make a cool, fully animated trailer that has zero gameplay material in terms of video material, has basically nothing to do with what you do in the game, just to get people to play it and make them excited about it. Before we had mobile games, browser games did the exact same thing. And I know RuneScape is a browser game, sort of, but I'm talking about these text-based browser games. RuneScape looks amazing in NXT. Put, like, the NXT trailer together, and you have an amazing trailer for RuneScape. And they do something like this. I don't understand how they can pull it off.
Yeah. I mean, this was for Gamescom in Cologne, Germany this week. They say they debuted this at Gamescom, and they built this for 15 years of RuneScape and to show why RuneScape is still an essential part of the gaming landscape. So I guess maybe, I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate here again, but perhaps this is, you know, just to kind of show people the grand presentation of what they want RuneScape to be. Now, granted, you get to the Ark, there you have RNG-based exploration missions you have to pay for, and not much else currently that is worth writing home about to veteran players. And the problem with that is that veteran players are the player base who are going to be at the Ark, because you need at least one level 90 skill to get there. So,
I mean, to be fair, I was like thinking to look at another trailer, and I'm looking here at a World of Warcraft expansion trailer, and that's also completely cinematic, but at least it's not narrated like it is a mobile game. So I think I made my stance clear on this. I don't know what Jack is doing with this. I think it's a huge misstep, and
all right. I'll just say about this that I think that the the musical score for this was great. Could you imagine if we had music like that in RS? I mean, we did a bit when they went to the symphony to have the main RS theme recorded and the RS3 sounds, but beyond that, most of it has still been in-house. But I mean, this is the kind of music that you would hear in movies like Harry Potter and Star Trek, I think.
I mean, it sounds amazing. I mean, Jerry should make sounds actually work in game first again. But otherwise, I would love to hear more like this. And some tracks in game are amazing. Not as amazing as this, I admit. But there is definitely already a trend towards it for new music. So I think they are pretty good on the music front right now.
Alrighty. Well, there's that, and we have another video to look at this week, and that is the behind-the-scenes video for next week's Skilling Pets update, which, of course, came from the 2017 content survey. So,
woo! Who is excited for some more grinding?
Well, I mean, they come in the form of same activities that give you shattered rocks, right? So it's not something that you necessarily have to grind. I don't think I'm going to outright grind for them. That's not my kind of gameplay, but I guess whenever they come, I will receive them. So
my guess is that you can complete both the golden statue entirely and the statue of Damrock before getting your first skilling pet. So I think it's grinding.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why I say I'm not going to outright go for them. And if I get one Monday, I get one. And if not, that's okay. In this video, they basically go through the pets' names and what they look like, which I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. I think that that maybe some of these should have been kept under wraps and let players discover them the old-fashioned way, because that's, you know, how we would have done it back then. But basically, we got an agility monkey, a house for construction, a divination wisp, Ramsay the chef, a crafting golem, a farming scarecrow, a fish for fishing, a feather for fletching, a turtle for herb lore, a hawk for hunting, some rock golem for mining, a flying gargoyle for slayer, and some wood for wood cutting, and then some burning wood named Bernie for fire making, and then finally a squirrel with a pouch for thieving. So that's what things are looking like for the skilling pets here, and those are coming next week. What do you think of their appearance? I mean, we'll save the why and how long and should this have been done this way for next week, but
Well, first of all, I agree. I think it would have been so much more interesting if people didn't know what they were getting into. And then getting the first pet is going to be so special because you're going to be the first one to see how it looks. You're going to be able to show off. People will like try and find out. And of course, images will spread. But it will be so much more community focused.
Yeah.
Why doesn't Jerix take this chance to make like it's free for them? It's actually more than free. Just don't put in the effort of showing them off, and you would make
a community event. You would have a huge amount of hype behind them.
You make a community event about normal update. It's free. But yeah, right.
Yeah.
How they look? I think they look all right. They fit with the general style of the game. I'm a bit sad that the... that Bernie doesn't look very interesting because fire making is one of my favorite skills. I was going to go for it.
Really?
But I'm not really interested in having a flaming log walking behind me. I find the pets of the... I think it's a char quest that gives you like the cool fire making pets.
Fire orb from...
those are way more interesting. So yeah. I'm not really interested in getting them.
Is fire making really one of your favorite skills?
Yeah. It's really boring to train. I know. I just like seeing things go on fire.
All right.
I don't know. I enjoy fire making for some weird reason. It's really relaxing.
Did you enjoy it before bonfires came out?
No. All right. I'm going to sit for 1 hour and be ashamed.
I love that submissive. No. No. I do have to say, I don't think that a scarecrow is right for farming.
I also think the dragon looks weird for runecrafting.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's from the Runespan, so it's not something that, you know, it just pulled out.
It's basically Spyro.
I'm not sure what that is.
That's a purple dragon.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
It's the game character, I think. I don't know.
Which one do you think looks the best?
I don't know. I don't remember how all of them look. I had a thing open. Let me see if I can really, really quickly.
Because I think that.
Oh, there we go. I found an album of all pets.
Oh, there you go.
I think the construction Baby Jagger's house is really original and really fun.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right. You know, I honestly like the Herblark pet, the way that one looks. It's not something you would have seen otherwise in-game. And then you know what it reminded me of? I don't know if I'm going to get some hate for saying this, but it reminded me of the Ivysaur Pokemon.
Oh, that Yeah, that makes total sense.
Because it has a plant on its back, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Others I like are the Thieving Wolf.
Yeah, that one. That one's pretty nice. I got to hand them to it. It looks really good. So
I also think the feather is quite funny for fletching. And finally, the smithing one is pretty cool as well. Pretty dope.
Yeah, so all around pretty good looking. And of course,
pretty good. Yeah. What things I don't like is the runecrafting one. The slayer one is just a gargoyle. I don't like it. And of course, the woodcutting and fire making one, I don't like either.
Yeah, you also get the garage pet if you do dungeoneering.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I have to think about what I think about that.
But what about the jack of trades and jack of all trades title for unlocking 10 of the pets and all the pets?
Gosh, that reminds me. By the way, I read that there's gonna be like broadcasts for the first person to get a pet. A skinning pet and the first Iron Man that gets a pet. So basically we're going to see those broadcasts the first day and then that's it.
Yeah.
So
I think if they're putting broadcasts on them, they're going to be pretty rare.
Yeah. I mean, you get broadcasts for every boss, like world broadcasts for every boss pet that you get. So. Or is it just friends? I don't know. I have seen people like getting the broadcast. I think it's a world broadcast. Not sure why they didn't do the same thing with getting pets. So.
Yeah, and I mean, I have some ideas about how this could have been implemented otherwise, and some functionality that the pets could have brought in that I'll wait to share. But we'll save that all for next week's episode.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun episode. So make sure to tune in.
Wait,
we're not at the end yet.
No, we're not. But we could very well be. Next one, moving on to questions now. Question this week, one question from Tycho, who was on the show last week. You want to give that a read for us there, Sirion?
I'll try, but I'm not entirely sure if I can completely imitate the accent Tycho did. So bear with me here. What do you think about not being able to kill Claudia multiple times on the same spawn or occasion? Well, so I guess what we're talking about here is last year in event it was possible to
sorry.
I can't control my nose. Take three.
I guess this is one for your clip show, isn't it?
Yes.
All right. Where do I start again?
Just
for the explanation
the
of the question?
Yeah. All
right. So what I think this question is about is last year you were able to go and kill Claudia, then quickly hop to another world where Claudia was still alive and do it all over again. So you would get rewards multiple times. And from what we have read, it is actually no longer possible to do that. Well,
I think that counts as a bug, and I think that fixing that is fair.
I mean, I'm not entirely sure if it would count as a bug, but it was definitely not intended behavior, and it was fixed. And I think it's fair. In a way, if people want to go to the effort of world hopping to get faster and more rewards, you got to reward them maybe for that. But on the other hand, this was an event that was meant to be done once per hour, and the balance of the rewards was around that. So,
yeah, I think the fact that it came out last year and you were able to do this and it wasn't patched is probably an indication of it not being found in time. And then by the time it would have been found, you know, it wouldn't have been enough time to issue the patch. And then, I mean, if you're only going to put it in for 1 week, why bother? And then just if fix it for next year's beach. So.
Or maybe last year they just didn't bother. And this year, because they had to like make some content updates anyway, they decided to just put it in.
Yeah, definitely. So, I don't have any problem with this. And, I mean, if you're on and you're going to be hopping and, you know, killing Claudia. You can do it every hour, so it's not like something that's being artificially limited to you. I mean, you know what time it's going to appear, and you will also have the chance to kill Claudia every hour. So if it's really that important to people, I guess they could log in, you know, just for a couple minutes every hour and do this if they really wanted to hunt those rewards, I think. At least that's my stats on it.
Yeah, sounds completely fine.
Yeah, and that's what you think too, right?
Yeah, I agree. It's.
All right. Well, thank you for that question, Tycho. If anybody else would like to send questions in, you could leave us a voicemail or text us at 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. Or if you want to send an audio question in, which are really nice, you can email them to questions at rsbnb.com in addition to the phone number, or leave us a DM on Twitter at rsbnb, where you can write to your heart's content. And in case anyone's wondering, something has triggered an allergy attack here, so that's why I am having trouble speaking at the moment, and why it took us 3 takes to do your question, Tycho. So you guys will hear more about that at the end of your clip show. Okay, so, tech news. What do you think of this one? Uber's first self-driving fleet arrives in Pittsburgh this month. Custom Volvo XC90s that are going to be supervised by humans in the driver's seat, but they will be self-driving.
So what I think about this is, I'm not sure yet, but I was sort of surprised that we were this far along already. I mean, I knew that there are being experiments being run to have self-driving cars, but I did not realize we are at the point where we can just have them drive on the road. So I think it's interesting. I'm also not entirely sure where Uber is going with this. Like, if I were an Uber driver, I would now be concerned that Uber is trying to cut out the middleman, basically.
Right.
Like,
right.
Like, if in a year or so, well, that's maybe like in a while, Uber's just going to have like self-driving cars around the city without supervision, then there's no need for the drivers anymore.
And that, you know, that's always been a vision for taxicab transportation in futuristic movies and whatnot, in futuristic lore, is that you're going to have self-driving cars. You just pick up, you know, a taxi or call one in and off you go. So obviously, I mean, there's work to still be done on this. But, you know, in light of things like Tesla's recent autopilot accidents and Google not even coming to market with its technology yet, and, you know, countless technologies later on, I think that, you know, this is a bold step. And I personally think we're at a level of technology where the technology is safe enough for self-driving. What do you think?
I mean, there are experiments being done on public roads. That is already an indication that we are pretty far along with this whole technology. Then there is the autopilot thing in Tesla, which, I mean, we had the accident, but in general, it works pretty well. And so it seems that people are starting to figure this out. And yes, might be a bold step. I would definitely be uncomfortable stepping into a self-driving car by now.
Yeah.
But if this is maybe the first real test of self-driving cars, really excited to see what comes from it. I can see that Uber drivers would be concerned. I can even see cab drivers be concerned.
Oh, yeah, they're already terrified of Uber up here, believe me.
Yeah, but also, like, if Uber can't cut out the middleman, then what about all the traditional cab companies?
That's right. That's right.
I mean, if you get a cab where the cab driver comes out and opens the door for you, that's maybe a bit too far for a self-driving car. But, I mean, apart from the service, in a few years, you don't need somebody to drive you around.
Yep. And, you know, I think that when it comes to self-driving cars, like I said, I think the technology is there. But I think in times of emergency, because you can't always guarantee what the safety is going to be, especially while there are still human drivers on the road, I think that going for an augmented automation technique is probably a better way, rather than, you know, just putting the entire car being completely auto-controlled. Basically, what I mean is that you still let the person drive the car, but you give them a hand at things like lane changing, emergency braking, you know, proximity detection, and all that. Kind of the same way that modern aircraft work with their autopilot and fly-by-wire systems.
I think modern aircraft are mostly flown autonomously by the plane itself.
Yeah, they do. But, I mean, when it comes to the critical sections of flight, they are still human-controlled, but that automation is still there under the hood. That's kind of the thing.
So, I don't know a lot about this stuff. It's not my expertise. But if I'm correct, this is sort of what Autopilot by Tesla does, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Like you drive the car, but Autopilot will take over if, like, there's a car in front of you or whatever.
You are still encouraged to pay attention, but I think that there's a little bit too much discussion going on in the world at saying it's truly automated.
Mm. So, all right. Well, it's definitely an interesting experiment. I guess we'll just have to see how it goes.
Yeah, and I think Uber doing it is great, too, because they were the first one to break the traditional taxi
motif. It came as a real surprise, to be honest, self-driving cars from that corner. I think they have, like, a partnership with Ford? Is it Ford? Volvo.
Yeah, Volvo is here, but they might have a Ford one, too.
All right.
Yeah. Anyways, next tech news story is a potential description of how the NSA might have got hacked. The idea behind this is that potentially the NSA was discovered on a foreign server because someone got careless and left their hacking tools on that server, and the NSA leaker, Edward Snowden, who is by all definitions a traitor based on what he deleted and shared with the world, basically went through about how this could have happened. And it ultimately comes down to the idea that this so-called leak is that someone on one of these servers is sending a message that an escalation in the attribution game of this hacking could get messy fast. So basically what that means is that it says, if you are going to be pointing fingers at Russia for doing certain hacks relating to the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, if you're going to be pointing the fingers at Russia by this, and you are going to escalate that hack either by just pointing fingers at them or attributing it to them, there's a potential that this could come back and bite you. So it kind of underscores, I guess, what a flank of 21st century warfare could look like.
Yeah. I mean, is it actually confirmed to be alleged hack or hack of the NSA?
Well, I mean, you can't really confirm any of this, right? It's all alleged at this point.
But the hack tools appear to be working, and so there's a good chance this might be legit.
Yeah. And like, they look like they're American-made, but of course the NSA isn't saying anything, and the U.S. government's not saying anything either.
So I saw an interesting response to this on Twitter by somebody who said, we referred back to the iPhone unlock case where the FBI stubbornly claimed that hack tools that Apple developed would stay within the FBI and would not be.
That's right. I don't know why. I just find that funny.
So, I mean, let's just say that it's a good thing Apple didn't end up making that hack tool.
Yeah, and I mean, as much as we wanted to get into the, iPhone because it potentially could have had information on it. Anytime you break encryption, it doesn't just break it for the law enforcement. It has the potential to break it for anyone if that falls into the wrong hands. So this is vindication of that. And there's also an interesting thing here that I'd like to quote and say, this leak is likely a warning that someone can prove U.S. responsibility for any attacks that originated from this malware server, and this could have significant foreign policy consequences, particularly if any of those operations targeted U.S. allies. So basically what this is saying is that there's someone out there knows who did the DNC hack, and whoever knows this can also say that the U.S. was spying on allies. So, I mean, it's basically saying that, okay, America, stop this right now or else you're going to have egg on your face about what happened with this.
Yeah, I mean, I have the feeling that the Cold War never really ended, or we might be entering a second Cold War basically centered around internet warfare. I mean,
well, yeah, I mean, that's entirely obvious for anyone who is connecting the dots about what the standard Cold War looked like, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look back at the Cold War, you had periods of escalating tensions and periods of de-escalating tensions. Of course, escalating tensions, early 1960s, Cuban Missile Crisis. De-escalating tensions, Nixon in the 1970s. And then once again, escalating tensions in the 1980s, Reagan, also there, one of the lesser known potential accidents was an American training exercise in 1984 that the Russians actually thought was a real attack. And thankfully, someone in the Russian government who was, you know, manning their detection efforts realized that, oh, this isn't real. They're not coming to get us. So there were potential close calls. Now, history aside with that, we saw the USSR come down in 1991, and then a more Western-friendly and free-market Russian president in Boris Yeltsin and Mikhail Gorbachev in the 90s. So, well, Boris Yeltsin in the 90s, Gorbachev in the 80s, but you get the idea is that things are slowly opening up in Russia. And then in the 2000s, you have Vladimir Putin coming in. You know, once again, consolidating control and kind of going back to the old ways. So just the fact that the USSR fell doesn't necessarily mean, I think, that the Cold War is over, especially with the Ukraine incident.
I completely agree. This just shows that there is so much happening, maybe something we don't immediately see, but these hacks and just the fact that the NSA is so big shows us that there's a huge internet warfare going on, not only against Russia, also against the Middle East, probably. And there's, it's probably a complete political mess by now, and I don't want to get into it, but it is sort of scary to think about that.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I think that this really comes down to somebody who talks like Edward Snowden, whether you think he's a freedom fighter or a traitor, when he speaks on matters like this and based on what he's shown to the world and what he's said, you kind of have to believe him, whether you agree with him or not. And I think that this is the tip of a huge iceberg that we're, you know, just starting to see here, and it could have potential ramifications in the next couple months. But with that being said, this all comes back to security and the fact that us in the West, and probably I'd say all the Western countries, Europe included, are behind adversaries like Russia and China when it comes to cybersecurity. So that's the story here. And maybe, I mean, I'm sure Microsoft and Google have been consulted on issues of cybersecurity for, you know, critical systems. Because, I mean, it would make sense you go to people who do this for a living, right?
I would not put it beyond the politics to not ask companies and be stubborn enough to think you can do it yourself.
All right. Well,
But you know, I wouldn't know about any relations between like companies and governments. Yeah.
But this is going to be a huge story. Just watch it. So.
Yeah, and the next development you will hear on the RSBNB Update podcast on the tech news.
Yeah, we like cybersecurity. But, all right, next story is about the future of the Xbox One. And, you know, when the Xbox One S was announced back in June, we had the idea that the Xbox One might be going towards an iPhone-like release cycle, and the fact that you could use older hardware to play newer games. That is definitely happening, especially with next year's huge hardware bump of the Xbox being released. So that was actually confirmed this week by a manager at Microsoft. So Aaron Goldberg, Microsoft's head of Xbox Games Marketing, said that the Xbox will be, and Microsoft will be, approaching console releases like this from here on out. So it's a future without console generations.
I absolutely love it.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, consoles are always a tiny bit behind on PCs. There's this thing where, because of the generation system, there's like this early part of consoles where you have like all the early adopters where consoles are really expensive and don't really want to get them. And then like the late part of a generation where you know that something new is coming up and you don't really want to invest in something that's old. And because of these hard cuts, I always find it like really... I mean, the point is, once the new generation comes out, the old one is completely forgotten, and soon after you will not see any new games for it.
That's
right.
This
way, there is always a new device. You can always go for a bit of an old device and still know that maybe not as long as the newest device, but there will at least be a period where you can play the games on it. It's the same with iPhones. If you get an iPhone, you will get software updates for a bit. If you get an older iPhone, you will be caught up earlier on the software updates. But even if you get like an iPhone 5S right now, or maybe even 6, I don't know, you'll still get software updates for quite a while. I think the 4S was only just dropped, wasn't
it? No, the 4S is actually going to support iOS 10.
So there you go. It's still being supported. And if consoles go the same way, I think that's great. I think it also is good for the second-hand market, which may not be very interesting for Microsoft, but, I mean, they might sell more games to it. So, absolutely love it. I think it is a great example of how an industry that sometimes looks a bit like old-fashioned can take on new ideas and, yeah, still hold true to their values.
Yeah, and correction, actually the 4S was dropped from iOS 10, so the oldest you could run is the iPhone 5.
So the only thing is that game developers will now have to be able to deal with more generation, more combinations of hardware.
Yeah, I mean, they can already do that because Windows developers do that all the time.
Yeah, so that is the... Like, consoles are weaker than PCs. That's a fact. But the reason why you can often get roughly the same performance out of a console as a PC, even though the PC is stronger, is because you know exactly the graphics card, the processor, the RAM. You know every single bit of the console, so you can optimize for that hardware specifically. And especially as time progresses to a console generation, developers learn more tricks to make things even faster. So that's why games, even within the same generation of console, often look better by the end of it, because the generation, because people learned all the tricks. And when a new generation of consoles comes out, it's the beginning, graphics are always a bit disappointed because they haven't learned the tricks yet to get the best performance out of it. So that's a bit the story behind consoles.
Yeah. And, I mean, Microsoft really needed to do this because the strategy, the Windows 10 strategy, actually necessitates this, because they're bringing out the Play Anywhere platform this fall with lots of the new games coming out. And with that, you're going to be able to purchase a game on your Xbox One and play it on your Windows PC as well. So if you can play it on a Windows PC, why won't you be able to play it on an older Xbox One, right?
Yeah.
And the example they give, it's similar to the with the original Xbox One and comparing Scorpio, which is next year's version, you'll be able to play The Witcher 3, is the example they give, but the version running on Scorpio will likely have quicker load times and better overall frame rate.
Yeah, so, but you can still play it on an older version, and that's completely fine. If you don't have the money to spend and you're happy with waiting a bit longer, I think that should be totally acceptable. I think that's amazing that you have this range of products, and it looks like, because Microsoft is the one doing it, this might be the big thing that's going to set them apart from
and
Sony,
they need to do that,
and Nintendo.
Because Sony and Nintendo are still on the generation thing. And
Nintendo is not a big threat to either of them, but Sony is. So,
and the Xbox One is just such an amazing device if you use Windows. It interacts with TV nicely. It's got apps. It's really great. Only reason we don't use it more is because iTunes and Apple has a bigger movie rental store.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I'm a PlayStation person and a Nintendo person as well. So I can't speak from experience, but Microsoft is making the whole platform like click together as a big puzzle.
And that's what I love about Microsoft. So that's just why Windows 10 is so great.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm done with that one, so I think we can move on to the Skill of the Month update.
Sounds great.
This month's mining skill of the month, Flash, is currently in first place still with 13.9 million experience gained. Tim is in second with 10.8, and Mandy is in third with 7.1 million experience gained. So mining definitely shaping up to be a three-way race here with about 13 days left in the month. Still could see a lead change in the top three perhaps, but it looks like we're going to be looking at one of these three as our winner for this month. So, what do you think about mining? You enjoy mining?
What I enjoyed about mining was the fact that you could use it in combination with smithing to create like a whole gameplay bubble that works within itself. But at some point, it became just too much of grinding. And I mean, the Seven Stones came out and it were a bit of a blessing because power mining iron, not my favorite activity.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyways, we won't dwell on that too much, but I'd like to draw everyone to informer.rsbnb.com for an excellent article put together by Colton. Colton has been working on this series called Majorat Lore. He's already on part three. Part three is a history through the third age, and he takes you all the way up to the fourth age, talking about everything that happened with the Majorat during the third age. I would definitely recommend everyone give this a read. At surface value, if you're just playing the RuneScape quest and you see a Majorat or you see Zaros around, I mean, you really don't have any idea of how deep this lore goes. And Colton has done a tremendous job in combining all the various lore nuggets around RS into concise articles that, you know, you can spend 5 to 10 minutes reading each part, and you can learn a lot about this aspect of RuneScape. So I'd highly recommend that you give it a read at informer.rsbnb.com. There's a part 4 coming as well that'll cover all the modern aspects of the Majorat, but part 3 was really great as well. So you can find a link to that in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com.
Woohoo!
Yeah, this is pretty great. I think everyone in Clan Quest and everyone around should give it a read. You too, Sirion.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. So we do have an achievement this week. It was Thieves. Our friend Thieves from the Bits Bytes friends chat got 99 invention on August 15th. Lots of 99 inventions popping up here and there, so congratulations to you. How's your inventions there, Sirion?
My invention is not as high as I want it to be. I think it's 69 right now. So.
Okay. Yeah, I should get back on invention, I think. But good job, thieves. Nice to see 99 invention, and we'll be looking forward to the 120. All right. So, time for pick of the week. You went last week, so I'm going to go this week, and I'm going to share something that just came online this week. So, recently there has been a question about the future of Twitter. Twitter is a popular platform for celebrities, for stars, and for companies to share out images, videos, and whatnot, and, you know, interact with their customer base. But the problem, of course, with Twitter is that they seemingly do not have a business model that's working. They continually are losing share value, and they are also having censorship problems with certain aspects of the population. And there's also harassment issues on Twitter as well. So this is a service that will hopefully, at some point in the future, replace Twitter. Now, this is essentially right now a direct clone of some of Twitter's very basic features. It's still early days in beta, but it's called Gab, and you can find it at gab.ai and put yourself in the line to get a beta invite. But the whole premise behind Gab is that it's a short microblogging platform just like Twitter, where everyone is welcome, and there's one difference, is that it is going to be entirely focused on free speech, with the exception of things that are illegal. So, you know, child pornography, promoting violence, promoting terrorism, those kind of things are, of course, illegal on Gab. So it's very early days, very sparse. Features are being added new every day. And this really goes back to the first time when Twitter was launched back in 2006, where the platform felt as though it was new and groundbreaking and, you know, was something that people enjoyed using. And I think over time people have struggled to find a use for Twitter, and it's not helped by their various stances they take on free speech and the fact that they're not making a profit. But Gab fixes both those by being entirely focused on free speech and is going to be monetized by advertisements with the option of a premium subscription model if you don't want ads and you want to support the website. So it's still very early days, but I'd recommend that, you know, if you enjoyed testing out new things in the first iteration of when Twitter and all these other services were coming online, or, you know, you're just looking for a Twitter alternative that's maybe a bit more fresh and a bit more free, to check out gab.ai and put your email address in the queue for an invite. So you can definitely pop that in and sign up. So that's gab.ai.
All right.
What do you think? You gonna put your email in, or are you much of a user?
I am probably not gonna try it out. I have Twitter, but I rarely use it. I just don't really feel the urge to share things with the public. So
yeah, it's sometimes hard to do that. I completely understand.
I did it a lot during the game development because you have an audience, you have people interested in a certain subject, in a certain thing, maybe in yourself a bit, but if you really want to keep doing that, you have to like invest in your own brand. I just didn't want to do that.
Yeah, entirely.
I think this might be an interesting. The problem is this is the internet. Things can sound really promising, and then people of the internet go there and make it absolutely horrible. And free speech to some people also means that you must apparently offend a lot of people. I could see this potentially becoming one of those platforms where people are not going to really end up having sophisticated discussions, but more like, oh, I really want to offend a group of people now, let's do it. It's free speech, so I can do it. I mean, you would hope that there's like a place where you can be sophisticated and that kind of stuff, but this is the internet. This is open, so I...
Yeah, I mean, it's really going to develop at some point when you start getting more users in here and seeing how, you know, the first banning happens, how the first issue is taken care of, how the first harassment happens, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I can totally stand about the ideological idea behind this, but practically, there's going to be a lot of issues this site will have to deal with. I think it has to define its profile by the way it does that, and it might just end up making the same decision as Twitter. Who knows?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's their history to check and watch, so we'll have to see how that goes. But you can find it at gab.ai. So, what have you been up to this week, Siriad?
So, I've actually been doing some more stuff than just my daily challenges and some Slayer tasks. I actually decided to take Invention for a spin again, and I trained it a lot. I used augmented weapons, but I never really did the perk thing. And huge shout out to one of the clan members of Clan Quest, which is Santa Ends, who played around a lot with perks and did a lot of research and just openly shared the best things he could find. And I decided to look into it and take those for a spin. And it was actually quite enjoyable, just making some combinations. And I did not really do the experimenting part myself a lot, I have to admit. Basically because I don't really want to spend a lot of time collecting all the components, trying everything out. But it was a lot of fun, like putting things together, finding the combinations of things I want, put them in weapons. So yeah, that was quite enjoyable. And that shows to me that Invention really added new mechanics to the game and was mechanically really interesting and still is. So I was happy to train that. And hopefully the perks are going to speed up Invention a lot, especially like with scavenging. I'm hoping to get some more components. So yeah, I basically did that, and it was a lot of fun. And then I went to the beach and just showed my body, sort of, to people.
Alrighty, well,
that sounds really sketchy.
It does, but I think we all understand what you mean. So thank you for that. As for me this week on Twitter, I mean on RS, I don't know where Twitter came from, but just doing some herb lore here and there. Did the medium and hard wilderness tasks, so those are all done. Debating if I want to subject myself to warbands, because I've always sworn off warbands, not necessarily for the combat, just the fact that it gives skilling XP for seemingly doing nothing skilling related in the wilderness, so...
You could turn it into money as well.
Yeah, you could, I guess. But let's be real. Everyone turns it into experience, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm deciding currently. I mean, it's a choice. Do I do them now and, you know, get in while there's other people doing them? Or do I wait till later and, you know, learn the whole warbands thing and so on and so forth? So that's something I'm thinking about whether or not I'll do. But aside from that, herb runs, I have managed to incorporate the 7th herb patch, the wilderness herb patch, into my herb runs, and able to get there and harvest on a single juju potion now. So that's excellent. Should see a huge increase in the herb profits with that. So, you know, that's something people don't really realize is that, it's a herb patch in the wilderness, and it's marketed to plant bloodweed, but you can plant any other herb there, and after you complete the hard tasks, it becomes a disease-free patch as well. So, there's that. So I'd highly recommend everyone who does farming to use that patch. But aside from that, still going for the potion recipes, shopping for Superior War Master, so daily Garageo cards, hoping for Meerkat, so I get the recipe, but beyond that, not too much else on RS.
Isn't it the consistent Jack card?
Yes, yes, you're right.
Meerkats is the good one in Sinkholes, though.
That's right. But that's about it. So I think we'll call this episode of RSVNB Update done before anything else happens and before I lose my ability to talk.
I'm going to slap on some sunscreen and go back to the beach to do some, let's call it strength training.
Right on then. Well, with that being said, we'll see you guys next week for the discussion of skilling pets. Have a good week, everyone, and thank you for sharing your time with us.
Gonna be fun.